see Khalil come right back in after this play. Play action. Newton looking for Benjamin. And it's intercepted by Clark. And he's back up on his feet across the 25 to the 30. And tripped up close to the 40-yard line. What an acrobatic interception by Tart.
Benjamin again getting off the line of scrimmage and has a pretty clean release right there. But Tart making up for his error on the penalty comes with a one-handed grab and covers, Tom. Just a ton of ground to come up with a great play for the 49ers.
That's Odell Beckham-ish, isn't it?
You got it.
They've only given him the ball seven times of their 31 plays. That's intercepted by Kinkley. He has more of those than any linebacker in the league over the last 5 years. Stewart inside the five and leaps into the end zone, somersaulting across the goal line for a touchdown.
I'd like to propose a toast. I said toast, motherfucker. La, la, la.
We the best music. Music.
Oh, this what we doing here?
Another one. Another one.
I might have to put on my jewelry for this one.
Rave talk, rave talk. Oh, we're talking that rave talk. Safe talk, safe talk. Here we go, talking that safe talk.
Major key alert.
Oh, we good now.
DJ Khaled!
Cockroaches. Cockroaches. Mother free man! Be the bad guy. Play. You know? Come back! It's the cartel!
About to cut the Porsche, Tony Montana. Yeah. What is good? It's your boy KC. Welcome to another episode of KC's Corner. Nine a Gang Remix. I appreciate you guys taking the time out to listen to your boy. When you come through here, you know what it is, man. You know the rules.
Put some respect on my name. You understand me? When y'all saying my name, put some respect on.
Unfortunately, there will be no respect paid to a 49er team. Well, I shouldn't say that. They got respect on their name, but they didn't get the W. And they didn't look good not getting the W. Losing 23-3 at home in the home opener, the season opener, to the Carolina Panthers. A very sobering game for the 49ers. A lot of expectations coming in. Not expectations Super Bowl-wise or nothing like that. Nobody's saying that. Not even playoffs. But they just, we definitely expected them to look better. You know what I'm saying? We expected them to look better than what they did on Sunday afternoon in Levi's. It just didn't go down that way. You look at the box score, Brian Hoyer, 24 of 35 for 193 and a pick. He had a quarterback rating of 70.3. I mean, that's just not going to get it done. I mean, we're not expecting that. We're not expecting, like I said, domination. We were expecting more than 3 points. I mean, I was pretty damn disappointed by the 49ers offense on Sunday afternoon. I mean, 3 points? 3 points, B? Come on, man. One thing that has been consistent with this team over the last couple years, and it didn't change in week one, is this team's extremely, extremely razor-thin margin for error. I mean, they have no margin for error whatsoever. You talk about a play like the one we had when they had dialed up two different plays, two different deep balls to Marquise Goodwin. And on the first one, He just flat out missed it. Well, which is absolutely ridiculous. Marquise Goodwin has been balling all in the training camp, balling in the preseason, catching everything thrown his way. And then we get him a deep ball early in the first game of the season, and he just lets it go straight through his hands. Straight through his hands. Man, come on, man. Jesus. And then the second one, Hoyer overthrew him a little bit. But the thing was, the plays were there both times. And they just missed them. And they cannot miss if they ever want to win games. They just can't. But like I said, the margin for error is just not even there. It's so razor thin. They just don't get enough opportunities right now to score after missing the opportunities they do get. You know what I mean? And you know, at least right now, this is how I'm trained and conditioned. At least you know when they miss it, they miss it. And one probably ain't coming back no time soon. So, I mean, that's what sucks about the whole thing. I mean, combine that with them turning the ball over twice, including the interception to Kuechly it looked like a pick watching it on TV as soon as Hoyer loaded up to throw the ball. And you know what's crazy is that my man Young Shanny, MC Shan, shout out to my man Paulie Mack, who gave him that nickname. I like that one too. You'll be hearing me saying that one, MC Shan. He has this play action play where they fake the handoff, and the QB immediately turns around and throws the ball almost without even looking. I mean, just immediately. As soon as the play action is over, he puts his foot in the ground, turns around, doesn't survey anything, just throws it where it's supposed to be, just expecting the receiver to be there and be open. And it makes me nervous every single time. The crazy thing is, like 9 out of 10 times it works and it's a completion. It happened in the preseason. It happened with Matt Ryan in the last couple of years. I would see this and I'd be like, how is he just throwing the ball blindly? And every time they would do it, whether it be Hoyer, Beathard, or Matt Ryan, it was there. Like, it's almost always there and almost always open to that receiver. And I guess this was the one time out of 10 that blind play action pass wouldn't work. And you got to give credit to Kuechly because he did his homework. He knew what was coming. He baited Hoyer into it. He was waiting for that. He was sitting there waiting for that. He read it all the way. And you got to give him credit on that too. So, I mean, that was a tough one. And that was really the end of the game at that point. It was 13-0 at the beginning of the half. And they turned that into 20-0. And that pick just you know, kind of ended all chances. But, I mean, that's really what was going on, you know, offensively. Los looked solid a lot of the time. You know what I mean? He ended up with 9 for 45, but he started out hot early, and they just didn't feed him the rock. You know, I'm not sure what Shanahan, you know, was trying to do. He got behind a little bit. Once he got 2 scores, maybe he was kind of panicking a little bit and forgot about working Hyde. But, I didn't think he got enough touches, especially for how effective he was early on in the game, you know, and he looked a lot better than the preseason. That's a good sign. But like I said, it seemed to get to a point where the game had gotten a little too far away to be able to keep running the ball the way they needed to, you know, and they kind of let it get that far away as well. You know what I mean? So that's on Kyle a little bit, to be honest with you. So, but you know, yeah, at the very least, it was glad to see them moving the ball effectively on the ground with Carlos, you know what I mean, and seeing what they were able to do with that. On the other side of the ball, on the defensive side, the defense was good enough to compete, all right? They could have been better. They could have been better, but they were good enough to compete. They were put in situations where it was just, you know, they were just put in too many situations where, you know, even a field goal was deflating to the ball game. You know what I mean? Even letting the Panthers get a field goal would be deflating. You know what I mean? So the defense, like I said, they were good enough on Sunday, you know, that you'd be able to compete with them. but they weren't dominant. You know what I mean? The defensive line, they did a really good job against the run, especially considering how disgusting the run defense was in last season. One of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. But at the same time, they weren't able to get any pressure on Cam all game long, and Cam was not great on Sunday. He wasn't. He was there to be had, and they didn't get enough pressure on him. And I know they talk about they didn't throw a lot of blitzes, and you know they just went with the four-man rush. Four-man rush wasn't getting there. And the D-line, you know what I mean? They've got to get some pressure, man. I feel like they've invested a lot in this D-line, which they have. And while I never look at Armstead and Buckner, like I said, I'm not Greg Cosell. I don't see how these guys go. But I never looked at them as some type of seek-and-destroy quarterback types. You know, they weren't these super pass rushers. They were more kind of run stuffers. They still have to get some kind of QB pressure. I mean, these are some big, strong guys, man. They are not no little guys. You know, these are some big, strong guys, and they should be getting some kind of pressure, getting in the face, getting in the lap of that quarterback a lot more than what they did on Sunday afternoon. They just got to be better. They just have to be better. One of the bigger things with this game, and really the biggest thing, is when my man Ferrari Reuben Foster went down in the midway through the first quarter. After making a hell of a play in the open field against Christian McCaffrey the play before. And when he went down, holding that leg, in pain, in anguish, everything completely changed with the mood of that game at that very moment. I'm not sitting up here saying we would have won or anything like that, or we would have blown him out. But it was a game. It was a game. We were competing. Then we had some fire. They had some energy in the crowd. And the mood of that game at that very moment just completely changed. I thought he had broken his leg immediately when I saw him down. And when I saw him down there and I thought he had broken his leg, got to be honest, I didn't give a damn about the game anymore. I didn't give a damn about the game. It absolutely sucked the life out of me personally when it came to that game. And I've heard it sucked the life out of the stadium with the fans and even some of the players on the sideline seeing him down. I mean, that was a soul-crushing moment in that game. It was eerily similar to last season when Navarro went down against the Cowboys last year with the torn Achilles. I think the Niners were up 14-0 or maybe 14-7 at the time. There was a lot of energy in Levi's. And the second he went down, the life was just sucked out of the stadium for everything 49ers. It was done. It was finished. And it felt the exact same way when Reuben Foster went down. Luckily, he was able to walk back onto the sidelines from the locker room and was actually trying to get back in the game, this guy right here. You know what I mean? But at that point, I'm not even going to lie to you. And this is probably sad as hell, but the day became a win. I'm not even going to bullshit you. The day became a win when I saw him coming out of that tunnel walking under his own power. It became a win. Foster could walk. He could walk. He was actually trying to get back in the game, like I said. But as long as he didn't need to be cut on, the day became a win. The kid is that important to what this franchise is trying to do right now. And that was just the crazy thing. He actually tried to get back on the field. I can't believe that. The man got carted off, man. And he tried to get back out there. When I seen that he was trying to move and get back out there, I said, oh, hell no. Somebody take his helmet. Take his helmet. Just chill the hell out for the rest of the game, Brody. You know what I'm saying? We don't even need to play around like that, man. We don't even play like that. After the game, when they were talking to him, they said it was a high ankle sprain. And at that time, he was trying to say that he'd be ready to play on Sunday against Seattle. And I had to hit him with that hove. I was like, boom, slow down, baby. Okay, we definitely not having that. You know what I mean? And then, you know, as time went on, it came out that he's going to be out, you know, for some time, which he should be. You know what I mean? My initial thought at the time was he needs to chill out. You know, definitely doesn't need to play in the game on Sunday that we probably won't be winning anyway, an angry Seahawks team opening up their home schedule. So there was no need to trot out a 70% franchise. That's what Reuben Foster is. He's the franchise. There's no need to trot him out at 70%. I was saying at the time, let him take a week to get healthy. Then you got the short week with the game against the Rams on Thursday. And let him take off about 2 weeks. And at this point, the diagnosis is looking like it's probably going to be 2 to 4 weeks. And I'm okay with that. As long as he didn't need surgery, I'm okay with that. Let him get healthy. Let him do what he's got to do, you know, to get back to 100% and be that Reuben Foster that we want to see out there, that we love for that 11 plays that he was out there. 11 plays. Are you kidding me? I can't believe the rotten luck we've been getting lately. Just everything about the 49ers just doesn't work out right now. But it could be worse. So I'm not going to pull a woe is me. Could have been worse. You know, when I said on Twitter that, you know, I just wanted them to chill out and not play on Sunday, most of the people that responded, they agreed with me, right? They agree with that thinking because he is just too valuable to the future of this franchise to mess around with. But there were a couple people who said, if he can go and wants to play, he should be out there on Sunday. Once again, I had to say, boom, slow down, baby. You know, they were trying to say it would show toughness and set an example and a mindset for the rest of the team from the jump, especially with him being looked at as a young leader. And you know what? To a certain degree, they kind of sold me on that argument. That was a pretty good point. You know, it would be an opportunity for Foster to come out there and say, look, I almost broke my leg out here and was carted off, but I walked back on the field, tried to get in the game, and I'm ready to play this Sunday. What's your excuse? There really could have been a tone setter for what's expected of you with this franchise. So, well, I still didn't want him to play. I wasn't sold that much where, okay, it was time for him to suit up on Sunday. I wasn't sold that much, but I kind of get the argument of him coming out there on Sunday against Seattle. It was a bit of a franchise tone setter like I talked about. Something saying, you know, look at it as a sign or a show of mental toughness for this franchise. You know, I understand that, but it's all for naught at this point anyway. Like I said, they're doing the right thing, probably 2 to 4 weeks. Let him get healed. Let him get right. And then, you know, and then we'll reevaluate him a little later on. Another thing on the defense that kind of stuck out to me on Sunday, Kwaski Tart. He had an up and down day on Sunday. And he made an impression on me, both good and bad, you know, for what he was doing on Sunday. He had his low points. I mean, right after Reuben Foster goes out, he blows a coverage and then completely whiffing on a tackle, letting the Panthers receiver just walk into the end zone. He had a ridiculous 15 yards unnecessary roughness penalty on Greg Olsen. That was absolutely just atrocious. It should have never happened. It was ridiculous. It was one of the most ridiculous penalties I've seen in a long time. I'm not even exaggerating right here. I mean, I don't even know where his head was at that point. You know? So he does those two, you know, boneheaded things. But then he goes back on a Cam Newton deep ball and makes one of the more impressive, spectacular interceptions you'll ever see, showing his big play capability in that situation. I mean, it was a hell of a catch. And it was impressive, man. It was so impressive. The homie, let me get the Twitter name. My man, @Mike_says so. What up, man? He mentioned something to me on Twitter, and I completely agree. He talked about having Tart playing that free safety role over Jimmy Ward. And I agree with him. I would give Tart every opportunity to play and learn that free safety position to possibly be the guy moving forward over Jimmy Ward. Now, I talked about last week. I said, you guys know I like Jimmy. You know, that's my guy. I like Jimmy Ward, but and I want to see him be a productive part of this team. But if we're being real, if we're keeping his stack, I just don't know if he can hold up for a full NFL schedule. I mean, he has no position. He's too small to be a safety. He's not fast enough or tall enough in this day and age to be a true shutdown type corner. He's a first round pick. You get a first round pick, you expect it to be a possible all pro. I think his best chance in this league and on this team is probably at corner and probably at the slot corner and see if he can work out some stuff there. But I just don't know if Jimmy can hold up. I look at Tart and he's got the size. He's got the athleticism to play a free safety. He can play in the box, pause, or he can play in coverage. He's got the athletic ability to do both. I think he just needs some experience out there. He needs some opportunity. He needs some reps. You know what I mean? So I would love to see him go the rest of the season. Take the rest of the season and just leave Tart at that free safety position and see what you got. I mean, you spent a second-round pick on the guy. Well, Trent Baalke did. Trent Baalke used the second-round pick on this guy. I saw something coming from him coming out of Fordham that just leaped off the screen for me. All right, Trent Baalke used the second-round pick, but he looks to have some skill and ability to do big things on the field. Give him this entire season to learn and either sink or swim. And then at the very least, you'll know what you need to do at that position moving forward. Best case scenario, you get that figured out. You get Jimmy working in as the slot corner. And you shored up two positions there without even having to go do anything. You did it all in-house. So I'm all for it. Let me know what you guys think, man. I'm all for Jimmy moving over to that slot corner when he come back. And or they can try him out the outside corner position. I think he'd be better at the slot corner, but whatever. But leaving Tart at that free safety position. You guys let me know what you think about that one. So that was really about it on the game. It wasn't a lot. There wasn't a lot to be, you know, cheery about when it comes to the game on Sunday. They scored 3 points. Their best defensive player, their stud franchise player, got hurt. You know, there wasn't a lot to be happy about. But, you know, I will say this about the opening game. It's one game. It is one game. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. Number one, people came in talking about they didn't expect this team to be a playoff team. They expect them to get five wins. And, you know, some people said 4, whatever the case may be. So, for those people, those are the same people who had those expectations of them, and then just completely are running them through the mud here on a Monday morning, on a Tuesday morning, you know, because they didn't look good in game one. Well, you said they weren't going to be any good. What did you expect? Me personally, I thought they could possibly get to 7 wins. You know, as a ceiling, I thought more realistically, you're looking at 5 or 6, and I still think they can get there. Like I said, it's one game. It's the opening game, so you know it definitely is magnified. But they played a good team. Number one, they played a team that is a possible playoff team. Some people have them as a Super Bowl contender. So you know the margin for error once again was very thin. You know that they're getting their reps in. Kyle's getting his reps in as head coach. You know all these guys are getting their reps in this system. From everything I hear, it's a system that as the season goes along, people get more comfortable with. But right now, maybe they're not right in the right spot mentally and rep-wise to be able to work it like clockwork and do it like second nature. So I'm not changing how I feel about this team right now. I'm not. You know, I think that they are a 5-7 win team. I think they will definitely show a lot better on the offensive end and do the things that I kind of expected them to do. Everybody else expected them to do. So I'm just going to be looking forward to that and see what's going on. You know, you talk about game ones in recent 49er history. The game ones have been great. They've been phenomenal. You know, whether it's the game they played at Dallas in Harbaugh's last season when they, you know, ran through them. The game they played Monday night, running through the Minnesota Vikings, running through the L.A. Rams last year. Week one has not been the problem. They've been phenomenal. You know what I mean? And the ironic thing about that, on the flip side, you look at the two teams that they beat, you know, two of those times, the Dallas Cowboys in 2014, I guess that was, and the Minnesota Vikings in 2016. Like I said, they just got beat up by the 49ers on those days. They went off to be playoff teams those years, you know, and bounced back big time. So I'm definitely not saying that I'm expecting the Niners to bounce back and make the playoffs, but, you know, it just goes to show you what happens on week one sometimes doesn't indicate what's going to happen for that entire season. And I definitely don't think they'll be – I don't think they'll be anywhere near as bad as what we saw on Sunday afternoon. So not stressing out about that. The other thing that I wanted to touch on, though, there's a couple things. So the first thing, the Levi Stadium is in the news again, once again, because it was blazing hot in Santa Clara on Sunday afternoon, and the Bay Area people just did not like that. They didn't like it. They didn't know how to handle it, and they just weren't ready. So I've heard so many different sides to this. I've heard so many different things about this scenario. And I can honestly say that everybody, it sounds crazy, but everybody is right and everybody is wrong at the same time. And what I mean by that is, when I say everybody's wrong, so Jed, Denise, John, the Yorks, they deserve a lot of the blame, because it is just ridiculous that, that's right, because it's definitely ridiculous. It's just ridiculous that this stadium is where it's at. I've said it numerous times. I've been, you know, a little more understanding and forgiving about these things than most 49er fans, but I've never denied the fact that Levi Stadium is in a complete albatross. I have no idea why it's where it's at. I cannot fathom anybody going out to that site before the stadium was built and saying, you know what? This is a great place to put a stadium. This is where it needs to be. I mean, if you've been around that area, there is nothing around there that makes you say, this is where we need to build a $3 billion stadium. Prime location. I mean, it's just, it's baffling that it's even there in the first place. And all the blame in the world goes to the Yorks, definitely, for leaving San Francisco number one and picking that location number two. Is just asinine. On the flip side, you know, well, and then they also deserve blame because it is hot in Santa Clara in September. You know what I mean? It was 90 plus degrees, like 92 degrees at kickoff. It's hot. I'm not going to deny that and say that that's not how it's going on. It is hot out there, and you're sitting out there 3+ hours, you know, baking in the sun. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and dispute that it's not hot. However, realistically, we're talking about one day, okay? One day out of 365, it's the home opener. If there's one day when, as a 49ers fan, you should suck it up, it should be that day. I mean, the way the stadium was looking after halftime is an embarrassment. And a lot of people want to say it's an embarrassment on the Yorks and, you know, good because ownership looks stupid or whatever the case may be. You're right. I'm not disputing that. But as a fan base, we look absolutely pathetic. And that's just what it is. Whether you're going to the games or not, whether you're not putting a dime in the York's pocket or anything else like that, you got to wear that. You're part of the fan base, and you look ridiculous as a whole. Not the individual, but just as a whole. It's a bad look. And for so long, you know, 49ers would tease Raider fans about not selling out and having their games blacked out and nobody wanted to go. And what's the first thing that they say, you know, when teams come back and they sell out the stadium? Oh, here come the fair weather fans and all this other stuff. But no, not us. We're a loyal fan base. We never do that. I'm not saying that you're not following the team. I'm just saying it's a bad look. That's all I'm saying. It is a bad look for the fan base to have 10 people on one half of a 70,000 seat stadium. And once again, when I say this, I'm not absolving the Yorks of any blame of this. I'm not saying it. I'm just telling you it's a bad look. And it's one day out of the year. Can't suck up the sun for one day, a special day like opening day. So I asked the question earlier in the week. I said, are Bay Area sports fans just soft? I feel that they are to a certain degree. They talk about how hot it was, and it's hot. I get it. But it was also hot in Buffalo. It was also hot in Washington. It's been hot before in Philly. It's been hot in New York. It's hot in L.A. It's hot at UCLA games. It's hot at USC games. It's hot at Oklahoma games. It is hot in the Midwest. It's hot everywhere at the beginning of September. And no other football stadium in the country looks like Levi Stadium was looking on Sunday. Not one. LA Coliseum comes close for the Rams game. That was also pathetic. But that also goes into a point where, you know, I was listening to my man Butcher and Baruch's podcast, and Trevor Baruch brought up a good point. And Bay Area fans probably don't want to hear it, but it's changed. It's different in the Bay Area. And he said it, and I agree with it. They are more like LA just as a region than they were in the past. And LA is like that. If it's too hot or it's inconvenient, they're not going to go. There's other things to do. I'll stay at the house. I'll stay in the air conditioning. And I'm not going to blame nobody for wanting to be comfortable watching the game. I'm just saying it's a bad look for the fan base. So the other aspect of this is, as much as we would like for something to change, once again, the Yorks aren't going anywhere. Levi's isn't going anywhere. Unfortunately, it is here. So what are you going to do? That's what I ask the 49er fans at this point. What are you going to do? Because you can complain until the cows come home. But the Yorks aren't going anywhere. Levi's ain't going anywhere. They're not going back to San Francisco. I know there's a dream scenario, but it's far-fetched, and it would include a lot of wishing upon a star. Like, you would have to suck for the hope of maybe something happening where the ownership changes and they move back to San Francisco. I'm not willing to take that gamble. So what are you going to do? Are you going to stay away from the team? And if you are, cool. I'm not judging. I'm not asking this question to judge. I'm literally asking these people, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because it ain't changing. And you can complain about it till the cows come home, but it ain't changing. So are we just going to have 10 people in the stands for the second half? And that's going to be what represents our fan base? Are you going to come to the games when they start winning? And, you know, just wear the label of fair weather fan, which is what, by all accounts, because Bay Area fans, I'm included. I'm not from the Bay Area. I'm from Sacramento. But I've been a fan of the Giants. I've been a fan of the 49ers my entire life. You know, and we're very critical of L.A. fans and bandwagon fans and all that other stuff who weren't there when things were tough. And, you know, they wear the badge of, you know, being in Candlestick when there's 9,000 people in the stands for a baseball game and it's freezing cold, and they wear that with a badge of honor and they brave the elements. But in this situation, they're not braving the elements. So if you're okay with coming back when they win, because I hear a lot of people saying it's a bad product. I'm not going out there for a bad product. Okay. When it's a good product and you go out there, don't get mad if somebody says you hopping on the bandwagon, you're a fair weather fan. That's all I'm saying. You got to wear it. And if you don't go even when they're good, then that's your opinion too. That's your prerogative as well. So I would like to see the Yorks do something, though, to be honest with you. Like I said, they're not going to move Levi's, but, I mean, they've got to do something at this point. Because the 49er fans, the Bay Area fans, have already shown if it's not a comfortable situation, they're not going to show up. They're just not going to show up. So they need to do something. They need to figure out something that needs to be done with shade, with, you know, a half roof or something like that. It'd probably make the stadium look even more uglier than it is right now. But they've got to do something because it's not going to change. It's not going to change. And I know they work with the schedule. I mean, essentially, they only have one of these games every year, you know, one hot game. They play a lot of road games early. They don't come back to Levi's usually till about mid-October, you know, or they play a night game in there as well. So they work out with the schedule or whatever the case may be. But, yeah, they got to figure something out. It's time to do something because this just ain't working. So the great philosopher, the great American philosopher, Sean Carter, a.k.a. Jay-Z, a.k.a. Hove, said it best. Nobody wins when the family feuds. And we're feuding with the Bay Area, with the owners, with the fans, all this. Nobody wins when the family feuds. So we got to figure something out here, fellas and ladies. Real quick, before I get out of here, I wanted to have my final segment of, you know, Niner Gang Remix, but, you know, I'm going to come back on Friday, but the Tuesday show, even though this is Wednesday, don't pay attention to the dates, the Tuesday show of KC's Corner Niner Gang Remix, and that is my college football position power rankings. You guys remember I did a little bit of this last year. I gave you, who did I give you? I gave you Deshaun Watson is the number one guy that they should be taking. I gave you a couple other guys that they need to look at for the KC's Corner top quarterback that we need to be looking at. I gave you another one for wide receiver. I think it was Mike Williams was number one. I know Juju Smith was on there as well. Corey Davis was on there. But yeah, man, the whole concept behind this is Niners are going to be drafting high. We need an impact player on the offensive end, right? We need a quarterback. We need a wide receiver, okay? I think they should go with quarterback first, make sure they get that franchise guy, but maybe they figure they can go with the game changer at the wide receiver position and maybe get a quarterback in the second or third round. I don't know, but either way, we need one. So to familiarize, there we go, I can speak, you guys with your possible next 49er, the next guy that, you know, you could be rooting for, your next franchise guy. Let's get a head start on it because that's where we're at here. Let's get a head start on it. I'm going to give you top five quarterbacks in college football right now, the guys that I want the Niners to take, you know, if they're available, and your top five wide receivers right now that need to be on their big board. Simple as that. Now, this thing is fluid. You know, it may change from week to week. The ranking changes from week to week. Some guys fall out of the top five. I know JT Barrett was in there last year. God knows he has no business being in it this year. And last year, for that matter, as the season went along. So it is fluid. People drop in and out. But at the end of the day, I'm usually pretty spot on with who needs to be in here, right? So let's get it started real quick. I'm going to give you the players, the ranking, and I'm going to give you when you guys can catch them this week, you know, for their game so you guys can take a look at them. So for the quarterbacks, KC's Corners, college football, quarterback power ranking, number five. And this is real fluid. He can move up here. I like the guy. I like the guy a lot. But we're going with Lamar Jackson out of Louisville. He's phenomenal. The kid is picking up right where he left off last year when he won the Heisman Trophy. and he's been looking real nice. He plays this week against number 3 Clemson at home. That's going to be a crazy one. That's going to be 5 o'clock on ABC. You guys can check that out. Number 4, 916 stand-up, Jake Browning out of Washington. He's picking up where he left off last year as well. Had a great sophomore campaign. He's looking good. He's looking apart again. They play Fresno State, 6:30 on the Pac-12 network on Saturday. Number 3, and this could move. This could move. Right now, I got to see this guy a little more. I like what I'm seeing, but I need to see him in a situation like I'm about to see him on Saturday, okay? And he can either go up, he can stay the same, or he can get replaced in a major way. And that is Josh Allen out of Wyoming. There's a lot of hype on him. A lot of people hyping him up as being that guy, that sleeper guy, maybe a Carson Wentz type. Coming out of Wyoming. He's number 3 right now. Like I said, I've seen some things on him. I like him, but I haven't seen a full game. I'm going to try and check it out this weekend and really see what's going on. And it's a good test because he's got Oregon coming to the crib, coming up to Wyoming. Oregon is coming there 4 o'clock, CBS Sports Network. You might really want to check that out, Niners fans. Number 2. We saw him last week at the Coliseum against Stanford. Put on a show. Shout out to my man Deontay Burnett. He was balling out there. Big ups to him. But the guy who was giving him the rock, Sam Darnold out of USC. He was a bad man last week. They're at home against Texas, 5:30 on Fox. He's my number 2. He's a lot of people's number 1. And you really can't go wrong. There's a dead heat right now for 1 and 2. But my number 1 right now, the Rosen one, Josh Rosen out of UCLA. Big up to my man at KMBR Murph. You know what I mean? UCLA Bruin, 8-clap stand-up. He's my number 1 guy. I think Rosen is that guy, man. He's been damn near pro-ready for his whole 3 years. Injuries last year was the issue. But, I mean, he looks like he's focused this year. He looks like he's ready to show everybody that he's the best quarterback in the country. And at least in the first 2 weeks, he's been balling. Now, you've got a nice little test. This is something you definitely want to check out. Getting up early on a Saturday morning, you want to check this out. At Memphis, 9 a.m. on ABC. It's a good test. See how his leadership skills are. See how he does in a bit of a, you know, in a odd setting. You know, the early morning start across the country. It's going to be interesting to see how he handles that and how he responds. But he's my number 1. So recap on the quarterbacks. You got Lamar Jackson at 5, Jake Browning at 4, Josh Allen at 3, Sam Darnold at 2, and Josh Rosen at number 1. My wide receiver power rankings, number 5. And I got to admit, with the wide receivers, I want to get more in depth with this. You know what I mean? I want to see these guys some more. I've seen them, but I want to see them some more. So this can move around a lot. The wide receiver can move around a lot more than the quarterback rankings. But we got Allen Lazard out of Iowa State. I like what I saw out of him. He's got the measurables. And when I talk about receiver when it comes to the Niners, we want a big guy, a big stud. You know, I'm talking 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". Somebody that's going to go up there and get the rock when you need it. We got the guys, you know, like the Marquise Goodwins. We got the Pierre Garçons. You know, we got the Trent Taylors. We got the little slot guys, the guys that can run the intermediate routes. We need somebody that can box somebody out or go up top and get that thing. So that's kind of what I'm looking for with them if you're going to take a receiver that high. But you got Allen Lazard out of Iowa State, number 4. They go up against Akron, 9 a.m. on CBS Sports Network. Might want to check him out. Calvin Ridley out of Alabama. Guy's a beast. You know, he's been doing his thing for 3 years. Alabama's at home against Colorado State, 4 p.m. on ESPN. Dante Pettis, who not only is a great receiver, but one of the great punt returners in the country. He's at Washington. We talked about Washington going up against Fresno State with Jake Browning, 6:30 on the Pac-12 network. James Washington, who a lot of people have as their number 1 guy in the country, out of Oklahoma State. Him and Rudolph are making beautiful music up there. They got a game against Pitt, 9 a.m. ESPN. You guys want to check that out. But my number 1 guy, this guy jumped off the screen to me. And I want to see more of this guy. And he's got everything I'm looking for right now. And that's why I'm starting him at number 1. Courtland Sutton, SMU. He's got the size. He's got the ability. He's got the athleticism. He's my number one wide receiver right now. And I'm going to take a good look at him. They got number 20 TCU at 12:30 on ESPN on Saturday, ESPNU on Saturday. So all these guys, all these prospects, they're all on your TV channels this weekend. So you guys can check them out. Tell me what you think. Tweet me, whatever the case may be. Let me know what you think of some of these guys that you saw. And we can get ready to, you know, root for the 49ers next Hall of Famer. We got one in Reuben Foster. Now we're going to get another one on the offensive end next draft. Simple as that. So you guys check that out. Tell me what you think. That right there, that's it for me, though. That's it. That's all I got to say. That's all I got going on for me today. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to your boy. Like I said, this was the week one recap show. I'm coming back Friday for 49ers Friday, previewing a little Seahawks Niners on Sunday afternoon. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I appreciate it. Tell a friend. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Y'all be good. Peace. Not a gang.
Are y'all finished or y'all done? I ain't got no more talking.